Today's guest is my friend, Dr. Michael Meehan. He's a medical doctor focusing on regenerative therapies to help the body heal despite a lot of pain. He's a very smart guy and an author of some best-selling books, but I know him more as the strong, silent type that loves hugs and made me feel a part of his community almost instantly. Enjoy meeting Dr. Meehan.
You know, just reading books like, you know, Dale Carnegie's book about connecting with other people and how to win friends and influence people, I was probably the total opposite of everything that's in that book in the beginning. And, you know, in certain instances, it does make you, if you want to call it strong or well-intentioned, and really get a sense of who you are and kind of what you can do and tolerate. It also gives you a really strong sense of purpose and, you know, with the intention that nothing's going to defeat or beat you. But by the same token, when you have a difficulty or a challenge and you got nobody to lean on, it makes it difficult. There's no two ways about it. So there's a balance there. I think you have to have the ability to do things on your own, to swim upstream like a salmon going to spawn, where you're not necessarily with the group or with the quote unquote norm, understanding it's okay to be different or a little bit out there to some degree. But by the same token, I mean, humans are naturally interactive type creatures. And if you're looking at blue zones and some of the other things where people are living into their hundreds, connectivity and sense of community and, you know, eating together and all those sort of things are incredibly powerful and important.
Welcome to the Strong Man Podcast with Dr. Rimka. One mom's quest to support her son through his rites of passage and becoming what I hope is a man of courage, resilience, and compassion in a world seemingly gone mad. It's Dr. Rimka. Thank you for joining me on the Strong Man Podcast. I have another strong man with me who I happen to know personally, and that's where we're starting with. Really friends of mine that I know either very in depth or I've met recently professionally. So I have another doctor for you. This is Dr. Michael Meehan. And there's some attributes about him that I classify as I perceive him as another strong man in my life. And so I therefore said, hey, can you come on and help me and give me some advice? Because, you know, I got this 15-year-old boy and right. I'm sometimes falling apart. And I'm a little bit lost as a mom. And I'm in that place between I don't want to coddle too much, but I also need to coddle because I'm his mama. And how do I make sure he doesn't end up too soft and frail and weak, but I also don't want him some aggressive douchebag, you know, thinking he's trying to exert force all over the place. It's a tough balance you men, Michael, are navigating right now in our culture to be strong, to be masculine, and also have people understanding that there's a lot of vulnerability and caring and gentleness that goes into that at the same time. And right. I think you've been largely misinterpreted, right? What is that? So that's what we're going to talk about. And I want you to introduce yourself and tell everybody, you know, kind of who you are professionally.
Sure. So Michael Meehan, my brand is Live Limitless MD. So basically my goal is to take you from ground zero to superhero, whatever that means to you, and kind of meet your goals for life, for health, for, you know, relationships, your spirituality, any other pieces that are incredibly important to your life and for your life. Basically started in pain medicine and musculoskeletal medicine and kind of dovetailed into regenerative medicine, using basically yourself to heal you, which is beautiful. Things like PRP or platelet-rich plasma and stem cells. And then that dovetailed into precision health, health optimization, and some of the other pieces. And that's how I've met you and some of my other colleagues through those groups. And that's kind of a little Reader's Digest version of who I am and kind of what I do a bit. And thank you for having me. I think this is a great idea and medium when we talked about it. And the other piece I like is, you know, you're very raw and straightforward. And for the most part, I'm the same. So this should be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. So for those of you who are just listening, you can't see him, but some of you who can, you can see right now he's in scrubs and you don't get the full thing. So when I first met you in person, it was on a photo shoot in Asheville. And I got to tell you guys, so first of all, what's your age?
I'm 53.
53. Okay, you guys, I know you maybe can't really see him, but Michael is banging. So he was on this photo shoot and he comes out with all this like rock tight t-shirts and tight. We're like, what is up with the body going on over there? Right. So, you know, we were all like, okay, Superman, you're looking, you know, you can definitely tell your regenerative medicine techniques and your time in the gym and your time in the kitchen are paying off, right? Because there's a lot of muscle in a really well-proportioned, you know, longevity, you know, pro-youth kind of way. And I specialize in the brain and mental health stuff. And over the years, I've gotten, oddly enough, more and more pro-muscle and understanding what that does to brain performance and mental sure. health. And right, this
relationship.
So very, very interesting. So I always want to see, like, there's a part of it is also just how he physically looks. And then when you spend time with him, he's funny and caring, and you have a deep craving for connection.
Right.
You know what I mean? Every time we talk, like, I love that you can have this package of all this muscle. Very clearly, you're rocking enough testosterone. I feel very safe in a room with you. And have no problem. I've seen you drop some tears and some emotion in this minute and be grateful and talk from your heart about community and connection and even your own loneliness.
Right.
You know, right.
It's kind of odd because going back and looking at my younger self, I wasn't necessarily that way, which I think was a bit of a challenge and probably it caused me some issues moving forward. So as I've gotten older and look at my younger self, that would be one of the things I would probably tell my younger self is, you know, collaborate, talk to other people. You're not an island. Don't be such a loner. Don't be over there and so aloof to some degree, because I'm an introvert by nature to some degree. And it takes me at times a little bit of effort to warm up to people. But once, you know, I understand who you are and what you are and that sort of thing, then I tend to open up and that sort of piece. But I've consciously tried to really work on that as far as that goes. I mean, and I thank you for the compliments on the physical piece and work hard on that. And that's really not been a super big challenge for me. I mean, that's something I enjoy. That's something I really focus my attention on. But the other pieces that you're talking about, that's probably why we get along reasonably well, is the mental health and or the brain health piece and the connection, the spirituality, the feelings of connectedness and those sort of things I still need work on. And still all of us are day to day and works in progress. But those are the areas that I really need to continue to focus my attention in and really become more adept at. And, you know, just reading books like, you know, Dale Carnegie's book about connecting with other people and how to win friends and influence people. I was probably the total opposite of everything that's in that book in the beginning. And, you know, in certain instances, it does make you, if you want to call it strong or well-intentioned and really get a sense of who you are and kind of what you can do and tolerate. It also gives you a really strong sense of purpose and, you know, with the intention that nothing's going to defeat or beat you. But by the same token, when you have a difficulty or a challenge and you got nobody to lean on, it makes it difficult. There's no two ways about it. So there's a balance there. I think you have to have the ability to do things on your own to, you know, swim upstream, like a salmon going to spawn, where you're not necessarily with the group or with the quote unquote norm, understanding it's okay to be different or a little bit out there to some degree. But by the same token, I mean, humans are naturally interactive type creatures. And if you're looking at, you know, blue zones and some of the other things where people are living into their hundreds, connectivity and sense of community and, you know, eating together and all those sort of things are incredibly powerful and important. So again, I think that's the delicate balance that all of us have. And some are too far on the interactive side and really don't have a good sense of themselves and they really can't function unless they're in a small group or with somebody else. I've seen people that are totally the opposite, where they have to have somebody around them all the time. Yeah. And that's as challenging, in my opinion, and difficult as the other way. So I think those are the things that I continue to kind of take a step back. It's why I'm in some of the groups we're in, or even with people that, quote unquote, would disagree with me. I want to learn some things or different techniques or ideas and ways to look at things. And I don't want to be in a, you know, folks that think exactly the same way I do, because then you're not challenged and then you're not looking at ways that you can improve or transform and change. So I think that's important to, you know, have brutal honesty to some degree. And sometimes that's difficult. Sometimes you don't want to hear those certain things, but then you step back and go, uh-huh. And you look in the mirror and you're like, yep, and that person was absolutely correct. And if I don't, quote unquote, fix these things, then I'm not going to make the changes and become the best of myself moving forward, which I think is, should be the goal of everybody. So that was long-winded, but.
It was beautiful. Love it. There's actually a lot there we can unpack. I kind of want to start to the beginning, what you said, like a lesson I would like to give my younger self. Right. So let's talk a little bit about your younger self.
Just sure.
So, tell me how you grew up a little bit.
So I grew up in a small town just outside of Akron, Ohio, about 4,500 to 5,000, pretty close-knit community. Sports was huge, so that was one of the things that I, you know, was part of, my brothers as well. So whatever season we were in, we played. So if it was baseball, if it was basketball, if it was football, if it was golf, any of the other things associated with that. So, you know, big team sport kind of guy. I mean, I like individual sports too, but team sports were a big part. I think that's part of how men have a bit of community. I actually had this conversation with a gentleman. I'm looking to join a men's group. But we had this conversation earlier in the week that men are great community with team sports. And a lot of times when that goes away, they kind of lose themselves a little bit. And sometimes it's hard to figure out how to get that camaraderie as we get older. So I think that's one of the bigger pieces that I really enjoy. And I have no issue with individual sports. And again, delicate balance between both of those, but I really enjoyed team sports growing up. I think one of the things that kind of, I won't change my perspective, but was kind of a influence in my life is my parents divorced when I was 11. And, you know, it put, you know, I had twin brothers who were two and a half years younger than myself. So once that happened, it put a lot more on me as far as, you know, direct supervision of them and making sure everything was taken care of around the house and you know, kind of limiting, in my opinion, just looking back, kind of what my childhood was. But looking at it from a positive standpoint, it did teach me kind of delegating time, responsibility, you know, forced me to do things like laundry, forced me to learn how to cook, forced me to learn how to delegate and that sort of thing. And, you know, that's part of the positive and to some degree, I won't say negative, but just the challenge part. And, you know, I think that's part and part where I became a little bit more isolated to some degree. Mm-hmm. I think one of the bigger pieces too around that time is most of my friends' parents were not divorced or weren't having challenges or issues. And if they were, obviously I didn't see them, and I'm sure they were everywhere. Don't get me wrong, but you know, it's a shock to the system. And then you're with dad every Wednesday and he's living outside the town you're in. And then every other weekend, which is all fine, but it kind of just throws your ecosystem into chaos and flux. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that had a pretty significant and profound impact, both from a positive and from a negative standpoint. And, you know, my parents at that point were both very young. They were, you know, late 20s, early 30s. So they were still wanting to, you know, figure out who they were and live their lives looking back and, you know, challenges of having younger children and some of the other things associated with that. You know, made their lives a little bit challenging. And, you know, it made our lives also different. And, you know, in looking back, I mean, I think I held a lot of resentment in the beginning, but I think I let that go finally, just trying to figure out, well, hey, not everything's perfect the way you see it when you're in your teens or 20. I mean, my mom was 19 when I was born. My dad was 20. Obviously, a lot of growth, a lot of change. And, you know, they both had issues looking back that I could see why the other did not, you know, want to stay or move on. Or, and they both moved on and, you know, were better for it, to be honest with you. But obviously, at that stage, I mean, they're still wanting to go out, wanting to party, wanting to, you know, explore their needs and their growth and their goals and those sort of things too. And having kids wasn't necessarily perfect for that. But no, we turned out okay. All of us are doing well and we're all pretty well adjusted. And, you know, looking back again, I mean, it kind of made me to some degree who I am. And the other thing that happened when I was 14 is I broke my right leg playing football and had two subsequent surgeries in relation to that injury, one on both sides. And that kind of introduced me to medicine, kind of introduced me to orthopedics and musculoskeletal type treatments, and kind of gave me a career path to some degree. But about the same thing, you know, initially, I mean, week before, you know, I'd scored my first touchdown and things were right, flying high, everything's wonderful. Next week, I'm in a hospital bed laying there with a cast on my leg. And same thing, I mean, initially you're with a group of folks that all have that common goal of trying to win and get to the playoffs and win championships and those sort of things. Then you're, again, isolated to some degree and you're kind of persona non grata. And if you talk to folks that are in that situation, from a team sports standpoint, you're almost kind of a ghost, and kind of felt that as well. And again, kind of made me dive deeper into myself, and again, probably forced me to build up walls and layers like an onion for people to have to peel back to kind of get closer to me. And you know, looking back again, I see that as a definite negative of things I did in my early 20s and probably even to my 30s, to be honest with you.
I didn't know that about your the injury. That's, I think that's a very common theme for people who go into healthcare of any sort, especially countless stories. I mean, I'm a chiropractor, obviously. Every single one of us pretty much came from an injury. And
true. That yeah, helped I would us. Agree.
But orthopedic, anybody in that kind of physiatrist, orthopedics, anything that does that biomechanical bone muscle stuff, I think almost all of us played sports and almost all of us got really hurt.
Yep. Oh, I agree.
Yeah. And I've never, you know, you just gave me an insight into my own personal life, which is really interesting. Because I know this is about my son, and my son doesn't really play sports, didn't really, you know, things are very different. You and I grew up at the same time. I'm 48, you know, and we will fast forward to marriage and your dad, and there's different, right? Your dad, correct?
What's that?
You have kids, right?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to fast forward to that too.
Yeah, because it's, absolutely.
Obviously there's a lot that, you know, you're when you talk, looking back about your parents, right? Having teenage parents in and of itself is its own stress. They were teenagers, right. They're children right. Having children. That level of immaturity is absolutely something you're going to feel, you know? Right. And you were the oldest, right? Which puts you in a totally different position, and you had siblings. Right. Which, you know, there's benefits to that and there's risk to that. My sister is by far the most mature. I'm the youngest. She's the oldest. We can see it. Kim is the mature adult. She always was the adult, but there was a cost to that. She didn't get to play as much as I did, right. You know, but you know what I mean? She, and I'm great. How I am, she gave that gift to me. Sometimes she looks and wishes she could be like me. I'm like, Kim, I'm only like this because of you. Like you are, right? You know,
very true.
So it's the yin and the yang, and there's pros and cons to both of it. But to mention the idea of playing sports, like when you're injured, like that you're the ghost, that's kind of, because I broke my back in college and I had that experience where like, I really felt kind of betrayed by my soccer coach and all the stuff. Like I was surprised there wasn't more encouraging me about the coming back over the summer and all this stuff, where I was like, wow, that was the weirdest experience. Like, there seemed to be, okay, you know, and then it was kind of that attitude that made me go, I don't really think I'm gonna like bust my ass to come back to that team. I couldn't stand her anyway, but I mean, at least I expected something, you know. But I came back and played intramural sports. I played a bunch. I came back for me, but not to, it was really interesting that that is that ghosting experience that I kind of felt bad that I was feeling bad about it. Like, I felt hurt, you know, I'm like, oh, you just explained, like, no, you went through kind of that too. And that's the thing. So, cause I thought it was odd, you know, at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, I think looking back and just looking at human nature, I mean, you really kind of see people's character, not necessarily when things are going well, it's when there's adversity and when there's challenges and when there's issues. And, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, definitely I've tried to do when people are having those issues is at least give them a sounding board. I don't necessarily want to give them advice or unless to ask for it, but just try to let them know that they're being thought of, they're not alone, they're not, you know, an island, they're not by themselves. And, you know, I think very important from that standpoint. You know, one of the other things that I really have had challenges with too, and I've been pretty vocal about this in the past too, is physician burnout and physician suicide is a big, a huge issue. And, you know, again, kind of the same thing is to support one another and just say, look, you're not by yourself. There's many avenues that we can explore, be it from a mind-body standpoint, be it from an overall health standpoint, from, you know, hormone loss to diet to sleep to stress relief management to, you know, being in groups, getting in a book club. I mean, there's multiple outlets available, and just trying to let people feel that, you know, they've got somebody that's at least thinking of them. And, you know, if they want to talk, wonderful, you're there. If not, then at least give them the opportunity to reach out, be it even simple like a text. I mean, sometimes that can be enough just to say, hey, thinking of you, hope things are going well, please reach out if you'd like to talk, do you want to do coffee, any of those sort of things that I think are advantageous and helpful. And I kind of feel what you felt as far as that. You felt kind of alienated. I mean, I missed school for the first week and a half, which was kind of my, you know, sweet spot, obviously. And, you know, trying to play catch up that first quarter was very difficult on top of all the other things going on personally. Your body's changing at the age of 14, you know, dealing with, you know, issues from the opposite sex or, you know, whatever your persuasion is. And, you know, you get a lot of things going on all at once. It's, you know, at times.
It's a lot. Okay. I got a 15-year-old. Yeah. And I, you know, a 15-year-old boy. Okay. Now, how many kids do you have?
I have two. I have a 20-year-old son and an 18-year-old daughter.
Okay. So you're right in the thick of where I'm going. You know, so you're kind of, you know, a little bit ahead of me in this. And let's just get a little personal. You are divorced, correct?
No.
No. Oh, okay. No.
Still married. We have not necessarily lived in the same town for the past 4 to 5 years. So
okay.
Not even necessarily separated. It's a bit complicated.
Okay. So it's complicated. All right. So you're legally married, but you've been living separate houses for a while. Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
Different states even is what it sounds like sometimes. Correct. Right. Okay. So the kids, what have they had to do?
You know, one of the issues that came up soon when I left for another job in 2016 going into 17 is my daughter was diagnosed with an eating disorder, and she's had some health issues associated with that since that point. And she's not been able to attend school on a regular basis. She's not been able to do the things that she has done in the past, like dance. And, you know, it's taken a toll, I think, on the whole family, unfortunately. And, you know, especially her with her inability to do a good number of things that she's wanted to do. She is, you know, ready to graduate high school this summer. She's done most of that through online courses and that sort of thing. So when COVID hit, that was not a big issue for her overall, because she had been doing that before. But she's not been able to either move or travel or do any of those sort of things. So, and then, my son initially went to the University of Tennessee, did well for this first semester, and then did not feel comfortable, was not thriving and not doing well. So he went back to North Carolina and is actually doing great now at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and has made some good contacts and that sort of thing. So most of the time when I see them is when I travel back, which is usually monthly or maybe a little bit more frequently than that. So
that's a lot. Some of that is very similar to me, and different, but some of the things dealing with, you know, with my son got sick, and it's a kind of an obsessive compulsive eating is a branch, eating disorders is a branch of this, some of the same chemistry, just manifests a little differently. Right. So my son's dealt with some things around that, right? And so same kind of thing, having to do homeschooling and virtual and stuff. He is super strong and healthy now. He's got super strong stability, and he'll be going into regular old high school in a couple weeks. He's super excited. But it's, you know, it's a journey, right? And there's lots of adaptations and accommodations the parents have to make to help on that mental wellness journey, to help reclaim a child's brain back. And it sounds like, you know, she's still doing some of that. So that's really, really interesting. So do you have, I know you're still in it. Like, I don't necessarily feel like I could give somebody a total big, huge piece of advice either, because right, we're in our journey. Do you have any nugget that you feel like, wow, if there's any little piece I've learned, I can at least give you this wisdom. Anybody who's going through something like this as a father, this is a piece of advice I have on this.
I think trying to put your child in the best position to thrive. And that may not always be what you anticipated it to be when they were born. I mean, we all have this idea, oh, I've got a young boy, see him doing this, see him doing that, see him going here, see him going there, want him to go to college, want him to go, you know, if he wants to go to professional school or something along those lines, then trying to get whatever, you know, career is agreeable to him or her. But I think you got to be able to adjust on the fly and see that some of those, you know, ideas and thoughts maybe need to be shelved, or you may need to call an audible and make some changes on the fly that are important. So, for example, I mean, my son has had some challenges with ADD, and he's not a hyperactive kid, or he doesn't have any issues as far as discipline or those sort of things. He just has trouble concentrating, sitting, reading for long periods of time. And, you know, we did well. There weren't any major issues, but again, trying to figure out ways to get him to thrive. And you know, initially we had him in a STEM type program and did okay. But we had the opportunity to put him in public school. And, you know, he was one of those kids that was going to be kind of right in the middle. And if you kind of have an idea how public schools run, either if you're in the middle, you don't get a lot of attention. If you're up high, you tend to get, you know, a good amount of attention. If you're kind of lagging or you're a problem from a behavior standpoint, you get a lot of attention too. But it's those kids in the middle that kind of just get shoved along. And, you know, I'm a big public school product and big proponent, to be honest with you. But the best choice that we made for him was to put him in a private school. And he hated us for us. He hated it for probably the first year or two. I mean, at times he refused to get in the car to go to school. He'd just come home and just cry and, you know, pitch fit and those sort of things. But after a while, I think he kind of got the method of the madness and got an idea that this was the right spot, the right place for him. And he got the attention that he needed. I think they understood different learning styles. It wasn't just, you know, read this, write this, do this approach. They were willing to kind of work with, you know, visual learners versus, you know, auditory learners versus whatever learning style worked best for you. And I think it really gave him an opportunity to kind of grow into himself to some degree. And
let me say this. So it sounded like there's a few things that you said. You had to give up your expectations.
Correct.
Right. You had an expectation of what, you know, oh, I'm a proud father. I got this boy, you know, there's really nothing that is really, I mean, a therapist told me this once, I'm gonna be a little crass, but she's like, really, there's nothing that's going to make a man's dick harder than having a son. Cause pretty much like there it is. He can replicate himself right there. So, you know, like he's excited, you know what I mean? I was like, okay.
Absolutely.
And she was speaking about it from, a pathological standpoint. She was explaining narcissism to me. And so I see, she's like, oh, well, for a narcissist, I mean, are you kidding? Because he only loves himself. And if he has a son, that's a possession now. It's right. Really not love. He owns this thing and it looks like him. Are you kidding? Right. So it was really interesting. So, but there's a healthy version of that, right? When you're not a narcissist, of course, that's a normal pride thing. It's a normal primal genetic. Red light panel therapy is one of the best things you can ever do for your body, especially anything that has an itis on the end. That's inflammation, that's pain, redness, swelling, muscle recovery, sports recovery, joint pain, you name it. This is what Dr. Meehan does, and red light therapy is a great adjunct therapy to whether you use in PRP, exosomes, I don't care. Red light. Get yours for 20% off with the code RIMKA20 at checkout at emr-tek.com. RIMKA20 saves 20% off the best red light panels you can imagine. I've got 5 in my house. That's how much I love them. Yeah, mine. And you've passed along, you know, your DNA. That's normal. That's a healthy thing. That's wonderful, right? So you had some expectations. And of course, we like these expectations to be like us. I play sports, they play sports. You go to college, you know, like whatever, right? You had to let some of that go. And it sounded like, well, you're also willing to have your kid hate you for a while. Like, yeah, I'm not your best friend.
It's painful.
Yeah, it is. It is really painful.
Yeah, I mean, just the simple example, I mean, baseball is my favorite sport, and I always enjoyed kind of that one-on-one with the pitcher and kind of the nuance to it, kind of some of the mind games associated with it, those sort of things. And my son with his ADD, I mean, he couldn't pay attention long enough. He'd sit out in the outfield and he'd be looking around and not paying attention and that sort of thing. He's like, I don't like this at all. And it's like, okay. So, you know, one of the things, we made him finish the season, so we couldn't quit mid-season, but kind of listened to him at that stage, and he did better with other sports. He was a great swimmer, so swimming was wonderful for him, because most of the races were pretty quick. He could keep his attention and that sort of thing. And then he was a great relay person, just because he had a good sense of team and community, too. He liked that rush of the competition. And basketball was his other thing. So, I mean, we got to bond on other pieces and spend time that way. But I agree. I mean, when you have a boy, you think you're going to have a friend for life and you all are going to do, you know, things like go to games or, you know, go to on vacations or whatever, that sort of thing, and do guy stuff. I agree. Yeah. But sometimes you have to, you know, change on the fly, and it's not always what you want. It's to some degree what they want as well. But yeah, I mean, he hated his mom and dad probably for 12, 18 months. And it was difficult. There was no two ways about it. And but I think, again, he figured it out. And, you know, he would probably say it was the best decision for him at that stage. So, and he's grown quite a bit since that point. And you know, I'm very proud of him and the direction he's going. And he's not like me at all, which is probably a good thing. So.
Oh, I love that and don't like it at the same time. Where it's like, okay, I go through that with my son a lot, where he's a lot like me and I'm in this deep moment of having to understand, well, I'm not a boy. I'm not a man. I'm a woman trying to raise a boy into a man. That's a certain kind of art that I don't think we've really been taught how to do. I don't think there's a lot of cultural information on that. I think you have, at least here in America, where I grew up, my dad wasn't around, right? So I was in a house with a mother who everything, she was the end all be all. all decisions, the buck stopped there. All the money came from there. All the everything came from there. There was no need to ask daddy anything, because for what? You know, like, she's in charge. Right. Okay. So there was four of us, two girls, two boys. You can definitely look at it now. And for some reason, my mom knew this. I don't know how she knew this in 1970, whatever. She didn't get to go to college or anything back then. You know, you kind of got married and you had kids, right. You know, most people, right? Didn't, not everybody right. went to college. And you know, she didn't get married, but that didn't work out and he was gone. So, but she knew that my brothers needed the father more than we did. And how the boys, we always said they're the boys and we're the girls. They ended up very different than my sister and I, right? Right. So the choices, the absence of the father. Now, we don't know for sure if they would have ended up, the choices they would have made towards alcoholism and drug addiction and prison would have happened anyway, but my mother's compassion and kind of even over-coddling at times was very strong. And she had to like kind of said like, why are they getting that for me, right? You said the kid, they got all the attention. My sister and I got like, we seemed to be fine. So we didn't get any attention. Right. We didn't need any attention. We seemed to get it all together. We could work it out, right? They seemed to need all this extra help. And she always would give it. And I, of course, there was some resentment, like, what? Like, I don't get it. You know, like, but she then eventually, you don't understand. You have me. You and Kim, the girls need their mothers. The boys need their fathers. And they missed out. I can't produce another one for them. You know what I mean? And she goes, you need to remember that. They're lost. They, you know, I'm not a man. But she tried. You know, she tried to find them in Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts and whatever, you know. Right. And, you know, when she would date somebody, you try to get the guy to take them boating or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And she did what she could do. But it was a very interesting conversation that I've never forgotten. I was very young, in my teens or something like that, when they were in the midst of their chaos and drug addictions and bringing chaos into the home all the time. Her level of, I was angry that she kept letting them come back. And she's like, I will never not let any of you come back, no matter what.
Right.
And you have to remember, trying to say, you need more compassion, because them not having a father, she felt guilt. I mean, it was clear, like, sure. Right. So trying to balance that. And I go through that, like, well, my son does have a father. There's a father around. Right. So we're not in the same situation by any means. But my model was, she just made all the decisions. Now you have like this co-parenting, which is something you're having to navigate, right? There's an other co-parenting going on, different opinions. The kids are having to see things. There's a back and forth. And me trying to understand when I defer, when the mama bear warrior has to come up and protect my little boy, you know, when I have to let him go, and I just told him like yesterday or today, like, because he's 15 and we're doing the driving thing and it's horrifying. Like, I'm like, there's nothing, I'm like, my nervous system can't handle it, Michael. We were in perimeter Atlanta, 285 merging. I'm like, oh God, I just can't brake, stop, slow down, watch the cars. You know, I'm trying to be like, oh God, this, everything's going to be fine. And we're going to be fine. And it's that mix of like, you're not an adult. You're not a child. I've got to let you make big mistakes. Some of the mistakes could be life altering at this age. You know, this is the most dangerous time of your life is adolescence. They're more likely to have a serious injury or death now than any other time in their lives.
Agreed.
You don't need to know that. Sometimes don't you wish you didn't know the doctor things? I'm like, I need that factoid as I'm driving, right? So it's that mix. And I try to tell them like, babe, it's a tough call because I used to control everything. I used to have an answer for you for everything. I used to be the end all information fountain. The father just deferred, whatever your mom says, right? I had all of it. He abdicated. Now I have to like, that's different. Dad, you know, it's an interesting space. So do you have any, you're kind of, you know, you got a wife and the kids and the right. this and that. What does that conjure up for you watching what your own parents went through, watching right. what you're going through, watching what like, what are we navigating? And like, right. how does a mom, a woman go, right? Because right. I'm at least clear. Hey, you're a guy. You got to go with guys and like scratch your balls and fart and do things. And like, I had to explain to him some things. Honey, you don't tell me. I'm like, believe it or not, like, I know you're used to telling me all, but it's going to be totally okay that you talk to your friends about things that you aren't going to tell me. Right. Like, that's appropriate. I don't actually need to know everything. He's like, oh, I'm like, and you're not doing anything wrong. Like, you know what I mean? You have the health and safety conversations around when you got to tell a mama something, if someone's being hurt or, you know, which is an odd thing. Like, but, you know, I'm at that point where I'm like having to explain, well, you know, what the penis is going to like, you know, morning erections. And if your sheets are wet, and he's like, well, I said, just, I'm letting you know if that happens, just let me know. And don't hide the thing. It's no big deal, but I got to wash it. Like, and I don't think a lot of women are comfortable having those conversations, and they like try to hide and defer and act like it's not happening.
Well,
I want anything as a man that you could say, because there's that fine balance where I have patients, right? Moms of boys, I see a lot of them, and I have to tell them they want to make all their boys, oh, well, I was thinking, you know, he could do yoga. I'm like, yoga's lovely, but he needs to like learn to fight. I'm like, you need to box or wrestle, and they need to learn to take a punch and throw a punch. And that kind of surprises women when I say that. And I'm like, do you guys like, wow, because they have no men in their lives giving them that advice. So I really want you to be a little bit frank with me about anything you would say, like, please make sure you do this. Please make sure he has this, or this went on and God, it was a shit show for me and my brothers. It was bad to have it like this or whatever. Anything you got on that?
Yeah. I mean, those are all issues that come up over and over again and again when you're looking at divorced families, or a parent passes away or dies or disappears or any of those sort of things, and then the other parent's got to take over both roles, which makes it very difficult, very challenging. I applaud everybody that steps up to the plate and does the things that are necessary, no question. I think one of the more challenging things to deal with, I think you brought up, is letting your kids struggle to some degree. And that's hard. I think, if you give them the solution to everything, pretty soon you don't have a very well-adjusted child. I mean, part of life is understanding that there's going to be some adversity. There's going to be some difficulties. There's going to be some challenges. There's going to be things that aren't going to go your way. There's going to be people that are going to be, total assholes to you. And you're going to have to deal with that. And some of those people you're going to have to either work with or deal with on a team or go to school with or maybe even be married to, who knows? But I think, you've got to allow reasonable struggles such that they come up with solutions and ways to solve whatever is necessary. And, and we can always go back and say, oh, my childhood was this way and we were perfect 30 years ago. No, we probably weren't, but, I think nowadays we want to take away all pain, all difficulties, all problems, and we don't let our kids see that stuff's not always going to be great. It's not all unicorns and roses, and stuff is going to happen that's bad. I mean, hate to get morbid, but my kids had to deal with the death of my dad and their grandfather. I mean, my son was 6 and my daughter was 4. And we had to have conversations about, what was going on. We had to have conversations about death. We had to have conversations about the fact that he probably wasn't going to be here when they were, 10 and 8. They had a friend not soon after that. And they were probably a little bit older. Friend of theirs' father committed suicide. So, they were probably 10 and 8 maybe. Somewhere in that ballpark. So again, another conversation that was very challenging and difficult. And that's, I kind of told it myself and talked about my issues with burnout and some of the other things I'd had some difficulties with, and just saying, look, don't isolate yourself. If you're having issues, if you feel depressed, if you feel down, if you're having difficulties, please reach out to us. And if you're not reaching out to us, no matter what you said, reach out to friends, reach out to other family members, any of the other things from that standpoint. So I think those are good teaching moments and allows your kids to kind of understand that, hey, things moving forward are not going to be all perfect. But that, again, I hate going back to sports analogy, but that's another thing. Being involved with athletics, a lot of adversity. I think it teaches.
I don't, bad to go back to it. I think so. In writing this men's health book, where I started 3 years ago writing a book for him, right? And but it was very branded, kind of listening to these health coaches. And I think that's why I never finished it, because I need to just really, really get clear. You know, I went from writing it to my son to writing it to all these magical people out there. And so like then you're second guess, I was second guessing myself and what to say. And I'm scrapping all that. But one of the things, I still think I'll have these kind of key elements, a pillar, right, for him, because really it was about sports, right? It was about physical activity. Agreed. And the importance, it's the importance of boys and men. Like, I want you to maintain this, what you said, what men, and I played sports, right? So I had that level of team camaraderie, cooperation, learning resilience. It's you're talking about resilience and grit, and how kids today are lacking a lot of it for a number of reasons, because we're trying to overprotect and like make everything so, because we can make everything so comfortable now. Like, I didn't grow up with air conditioning. Like, nope, nobody had air conditioning. You know what I mean? Now everything is more comfortable. Everything's easier. You know, you can press something on your phone and food shows up at your front door 20 minutes later. That didn't exist. I mean, that was like once a night. Pizza night was once a, you know what I mean? Now it's like four times a day, and people don't even do anything. I mean, there's toilets that wipe you now. I mean, it's like, it's, that's where we're at. Like, it's, you know, so talking about having them go through some difficulties, being, you know, resilience and grit, like, okay, you failed. Sometimes parents are terrified of that. Like, but what if they fail? So they'll have to, you only learn, like my big thing is you only get confidence from actually picking yourself back up after you fail.
Oh, I agree. I mean, like, if you think about the things that have happened in your life, or, you know, I do a lot of procedures, and, you know, knock on wood, nothing's gone terribly wrong with those, but some that didn't go the way you wanted, or you didn't get the medication where you wanted, or they didn't get the response that you were hoping they would get. I mean, those are the ones that stick with you. It's not all the ones that did great. I mean, yeah, that's helpful, and that keeps you going, because that's what you enjoy doing, is having folks get better. But the ones that you, execution wasn't quite as good, or maybe they didn't get the response you were looking for, or maybe your technique that day wasn't all that great. I mean, you know, those are the ones you learn from and go, huh. So you go read some more, you go watch maybe some more videos, you talk to your colleagues a little bit more. Hey, have you had this happen? Oh yeah. Then you go, again, the other thing is you don't feel as isolated when that happens. You're like, oh. And I'll give you another example. I mean, 2018, I got together with a group of people in a course called Publish and Profit. So it was 100 people, and we all signed up to write a book. And a guy that ran it was by the name of Mike Koenigs, entrepreneur, great guy. Has actually overcome colon cancer, so we kind of bonded a little bit with that because of my dad. But so we got 100 people in a room. So we sit there, you know, doing the thing, and, you know, you do all this stuff with Amazon, and everybody buys everybody's book, and you can see it get sold and goes to number one status, and it's all kind of fun. But the more fun of that was after we were done and we were all sitting around by the fire or sitting around by the pool or having a drink together. And you know, there was a good number of docs there, but there was a good number of folks that were just from all walks of life, entrepreneurs, physical therapists, other business folks, you name it. So a few chiropractors and that sort of thing, but people just from all walks of life, and just listening to the things that they were talking about and where I was in life, where it's like, look, I must be the only one going through these things. You know, challenges with figuring out what I wanted to do with my life. Wasn't happy with the orthopedic group I was with because they didn't want to do any of the things I wanted to do from a precision medicine or regenerative medicine standpoint. Feeling doubts of, you know, imposter syndrome from, you know, what I knew, being a dad, being a husband, being all of the sort of things associated with that. Then you're sitting around and you're listening to some of these folks. And one guy, I remember this so vividly, guy just sold $100 million company. And you'd think he'd be like on top of the world. And he's like, you know, I'm just not very fulfilled with any of the things I'm doing. Yeah, I've got money, but it doesn't really seem to jazz me. I'm not passionate about it. I'm not excited about it. I'm not into it. I really want to do, you know, something totally different outside of that. And, you know, you listen to other people in other industries, and they're kind of telling you the same things that you're feeling in the medical industry. And you're like, you know what? The first thing I was like, I felt that commonality, which was wonderful. But the other piece is like, you know, everybody's got a problem, or everybody's got a challenge, or everybody's got an issue. And, you know, one of the better ways to try to figure out solving it is to talk about it a little bit and kind of get a better handle and idea about strategies to make it better for you. Now, their strategy may not work for you, and that's okay. But I think having at least abilities to cope, handle, and move forward, I think are big keys that, again, I don't know that we're equipping our kids with as well as we could be. And, you know, some of it's society, some of it's us, some of it's just circumstance, some of it's, you know, who knows what. But I think those are the big keys that I think we've got to look at. And you know, unfortunately, everybody doesn't get a trophy. Unfortunately, everybody doesn't get a ribbon. Unfortunately, you know, some people get stomped on them. But that's not right. I mean, are you going to dust yourself off, get off the floor and move forward? Or are you just going to lay there in the mud and, you know, not progress? So I think those are the things. And, you know, you've seen it probably from all walks of life too. I mean, I look back from some of the folks I went to high school with, or you go to a reunion or some of the other things. I mean, some people peaked in high school. That was it. I mean, they were up high at that point and haven't really progressed or transformed moving forward. Some the same in college, some the same, you know, in their 30s or 40s, and some people continue to progress and transform into their 70s or 80s. So, you know, I think that's one of my take-home messages is, you know, try to continue to challenge yourself, try to continue to transform, try to do things that make yourself uncomfortable a bit. You know, get out of your wheelhouse, get out of the things that are easy or simple for you or that are routine. And go do something totally off base, even if, I don't want to say like
dangerous. Yeah, I like that. No, I like that. So like, go challenge yourself, something off base. What does that mean?
So, I mean, just stupid things like, I don't say stupid things, but like, I'm a terrible skier. And my wife and I have gotten into fights about her trying to teach me to ski. So some of the friends have overtaken and done that. But I mean, I used to fall probably 50 or 100 times on a ski trip. And after a while, I finally got a little bit better and I was able to understand what it was. But for a while, it was, you know, I consider myself a decent athlete and somebody that can do certain things. And that humbled the living crap out of me. I mean, I couldn't go down the slope at all. After a while, I got a little bit better. And other things like that, like, you know, music. I mean, and I can play a little piano, not much. Always wanted to play guitar and never learned myself. So that's probably another thing I want to do, or go back to certain things that you've done in the past. I mean, like I said, I mean, I loved hitting, probably haven't stepped in a batting cage in 25 years, but that's something I want to do again. But I think the big key is, you know, get out of your comfort zone. I think that's part of the problem with society in the US right now. I mean, it's always, you got to be in your little group or your little tribe, and nobody wants to think, well, if I'm a red, I can't think like a blue, or I can't think like a purple, or vice versa. And it's like, well, you can't 100% agree with one side or the other. If you do that, you're an idiot. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. You're a robot. You're a sheep. Have a thought process. I mean, are there things? I mean, I'm kind of lean a little bit liberal, I'll be honest with you, with societal issues and that sort of thing. But for, you know, fiscal issues, I'm a little bit more conservative. But, or, you know,
yeah, and you're wearing purple scrubs.
Absolutely, but I'm not 100%, well, this person's right, or 100% this person's wrong. I mean, it's like, think about it. Please, let's have a conversation. Can we disagree? Sure. Can we yell at each other a little? Sure. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I like passion. I like energy. I like focus. But, you know, make it constructive, not, well, you're an idiot because you're a white guy and, you know, you don't know what I've been dealing with, or vice versa. You're a woman, you don't know what it's like to be a guy, or you're a minority and you don't know what any of that sort of thing just doesn't resonate with me. I want to learn where you've come from and give me an idea about what you've dealt with, and vice versa. I mean, you got to listen to other people too. And I think that's one of the challenges too, is to try to keep your kids out of a camp, meaning, hey, think, listen, learn, continue to grow, that sort of thing, not I'm, you know, Second Amendment Republican, and anything else that's not associated with that's terrible. No, it's nuanced. I mean, yeah. Listen.
Well, I think, you know, what you said, I want to go back to the salmon, you know, because that was a conversation with my doctor that why I decided not to go to medical school and become a chiropractor, go very holistic from the get-go and devour myself. It was like, you need to be really clear. You will always, no one will think you're a real doctor. You will never get respect. And you need to be, so you need to be okay with being a salmon. You will be going upstream against the current, and you need to not care. If you are going to care, I want you to go be the best orthopedic surgeon you're ever, because that was my other option.
Right.
Then if you're going to do that, you need to be the best one that you're ever going to be. I want you to be happy. So you'll be fitting in a little bit more over there. Like, you need to know what you're giving up. Okay. So you brought up the salmon thing, and it's interesting because, you know, you are a physician, you went mainstream, and you've been moving in your life away from the, you know, you're talking this precision healthcare, you guys, and functional.
Right.
That's not normal, right? So it's like you've had to have these jobs, right. You know, you got to have a paycheck, and you offer right. bosses and telling you what to do. And sometimes it's not what you want to do, right? And this is a very common story with physicians who are trying to go more functional, more holistic. They're seeing bigger pictures and, wow, I want to treat the whole person. I don't want to just do drugs and surgery. Like, there's more to this. There's emotions, right. There's genetics, there's epigenetics, there's spirituality. Whoa, wait, conversation matters, right? Their trauma matters. This isn't a, you know, I don't want to be a doc in a box and see them for 10 minutes. And you get, that can make you, that's not standard of care. That is putting you suddenly into a salmon position professionally. I think anybody who chooses that route already has some of that in them. I mean, clearly there's a little bit of rebellion. There's a little bit of, you're going to be a critical thinker. You're going to question authority and conformity already in many areas. So going back to that, right? Like, yep, there's great value and asset, but what we also have to remember, that salmon that has the strength and the power and the courage to go upstream to do what it needs to do still is in a community. It's still in a school of other salmon. It's actually not some isolated loner. And it's like, how can we find that balance? You, me, I'm an introvert as well. Like, we need a lot of quiet time, but it can also make us be a little too lonely. My son can go through that. Like, at times he's an extrovert big time, but because of the situation, being an only child, being back and forth at two houses, being with, we've had the special needs education that's been bizarre. Plus now we got all this COVID oddity of isolation and distancing and Zoom schooling. It can make people very lonely. It's making these kids incredibly lonely, right?
Question. Yeah.
So how can we wrap it up with, like, all right, what's the lesson that we're getting from being the salmon? You know what right. I mean? Like, how, like, you're still a school of fish. You're not really alone.
No.
Right? And how can we do that and know to come together to, because I think especially for men, you are missing, going back to the sports that you said, that if you did any of that, you had that. And now men don't have anything once they stop doing that often. You know, we had hunting clubs, right? So that's not popular. You know, we're going to bastardize hunting. And those kind of gone down. Military, like, we don't have tribal packs of men allowed anymore, except in the sports arena. That's kind of like your social acceptable way. Then we had the military, right? That's kind of, and then gangs,
right?
So we had gangs that's in the inner cities. That's why they're there, because they're providing a male family. They're a rite of passage. If people don't understand that's why the boys want it. They're not stupid. They're looking for a rite of passage into manhood. And that's an avenue. So college is a one that we have, and that's why fraternities are popular, right? It's a, like, right? So I'm very pro male spaces, boy spaces. My son's gone to camps where it's been called Boys Mountain Wisdom, right? They're doing rites of passage. I'm like, yeah, it's no girls allowed. Not everything needs to be co-ed, you know? Like, you need your space. I think men need men's groups and men's spaces, and to go off into the woods and to grunt and do men things that you do. You know what I mean? And a lot of women I'm friends with don't seem to understand that. They, like, look down at their husbands for wanting to, like, oh, I'm like, honey, he needs to go off and have, why is it okay to have girl time, but men kind of aren't supposed to have men time? I've seen a lot of that. You have any comments on any final words about any of that? Like,
well, I think you said it well. I mean, I think men need to kind of search out those avenues, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, golf leagues, get together, or, you know, just grab a 8 to 12 guys and go on a golf trip or any of those sort of things, or whatever your joy is. It could be hunting. It could be, you know, baseball game. I mean, it could be anything associated with that. And I think that's incredibly powerful and important. I think as we move forward, men are starting to see that it's important to talk amongst each other and, you know, share some of the things that they're having some difficulties with. And again, try to get a little bit of idea and advice. The stereotype is to be the, you know, the silent, quiet, you know, individual. You just kind of deal with your issues on your own. You don't show emotion. You don't, like you said before, you don't cry, you don't get upset, you don't get any of these sort of things. And I think it's okay to show all of that. I mean, some people would say, well, you should never get angry. Really? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, sometimes having an explosion, just getting it out of the way, and then you can kind of re-come down and focus and get back to where you need to be, is no different than having a crying session, or no different than going to meditate, or going to, like you said, yoga, or maybe you go, you know, boxing class. I don't know. Doesn't matter to me. Whatever avenue or outlet you have to some degree, I think all of those are okay. It's just so it doesn't negatively impact your life or your relationships moving forward. Obviously, you don't want to beat on somebody else or throw objects that may potentially hurt somebody. But if you go out and you got a tire with a sledgehammer in your backyard, and that kind of gets rid of some of that tension, relieves some of that angst, and allows you to kind of refocus and move forward, there is no issue, in my opinion, with that. And I think that's part of the reason, part of the mantra where it's like, oh, that's so toxic masculine and all those sort of things. And there is some of that. I'm not going to disagree, but by the same token, some of that is just what you need to do. And yeah. I think important to embrace that to some degree and not look at it as something totally negative, but also incorporate yourself in other things where it is COVID, or where it is just you and your significant other, or, you know, it's okay to do some things on your own. I mean, that's the other thing that sometimes is vilified. Oh, you know, don't do that on your own. I mean, I like to go out occasionally by myself and hit golf balls or go do something in the forest. Well, I'll just go for a walk and listen to a podcast or just try to get in touch with my thoughts a little bit. And I think that can be important as well, but you're right. I think it's a delicate balance of all of these things. I think when we get out of balance is problematic with anything, be it, you know, health, life, spirituality, you know, too much sun, just the right amount. It's kind of the Goldilocks principle with all of this, is there's a right amount of everything. And sometimes there's extremes, and sometimes for certain careers, extremes are necessary to maximize that. If you're going to be a bodybuilder, obviously that's an extreme type sport. If you're going to be an MMA fighter, that's very extreme. I mean, there are other extremes from business where you may have to work 20 hours a day. Nobody wants to do that. Not good for your health, but unfortunately, that's sometimes part of the gig. But I think the bigger piece of it is to try to get into balance and understand that, you know, things are always working against you to try to make a state of entropy. And you just you've got to have the ability and some strategies to try to get that in, be it your finances, be it your health, be it your relationships, be it your, you know, goals. I mean, any of the other pieces associated with that. But I think have the flexibility and the versatility to hit that from a number of different ways and angles. And don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid to try something old that you haven't been to in a while or may have been fun for you in the past. I mean, going on a roller coaster. Yeah, I mean, silly things.
You've talked about fun several times here, finding fun. So I'm going to end with, and I hope one will be something based upon that. You said several things there. I'm not going to recap and say, because you might repeat what it is. Give me like maybe 2 to 3 of the strategies that you would, if somebody said, you know, my 15-year-old, it's like, all right, you know, Dr. Michael, like I sometimes have so much energy and stress or overwhelm, or when I'm frustrated, I get angry. I need some strategies to deal with all the intense emotions I feel, right? Because teenagers are trying to figure a whole lot out. They don't have as much skill set as you.
Right.
What would be some things you're like, well, here's some strategies that I use that you should try, because see what fits on. Because you gave some and they
are you talking for the kid or for the parent?
For the kid.
Well, I think something physical and whatever that may be. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, if you know, occasionally letting kids go at it with each other is okay. I mean, there's not a problem with that. But if they enjoy exercise, great. If they want to box, wonderful. If they want to do wrestling or they want to do, I mean, my brother teaches jiu-jitsu and he's got plenty of teenagers in his classes and really enjoys them because he can kind of mold them because they don't have any idea what's right or what's wrong as far as technique goes, but they're just so engaged and involved. Jiu-jitsu would be a great type thing to do. Karate, I mean, golf, I mean, you name it. There isn't anything I would say, boy, that's a terrible idea. Yeah. But get them involved with, I think, a movement type activity is outstanding. And unfortunately, we're not doing that as much as we could or should be. I think the second thing is some type of mental challenge, be it reading a book, be it doing some writing or some journaling. Even meditating is not unreasonable for a teenager. It doesn't necessarily have to be anything, you know, super out there or a Joe Dispenza type thing. But, you know, I think, you know, using some of the apps like Insight Timer and some of the other things can be very helpful, or just having a little bit of downtime, I think, would be very good as well. And I think the third thing is having a sense of community, whether it's volunteering at the homeless shelter, whether it's, you know, volunteering at the pet shelter or some of the other things associated with that, you know, being involved with activities with others. And you're right, I mean, with this mess we've had over the last 18 months, it's been incredibly challenging and difficult, but even moving forward, I think we're going to see some significant negativity that's come forward in relation to those lack of relationships and or lack of touch and that sort of thing. I mean, I just saw a paper that came out recently that opioid deaths were up significantly last year, not surprising, and some other things as far as spousal abuse and child abuse and some of the other pieces, unfortunately, that when you're around your family maybe too much, those negative points come out, and you know, I think we're going to have some issues moving forward, suicide rates, you name it. So I think having a sense of community and a place to congregate and get together, whatever age group you're in, if that's, you know, for adults appropriately having a drink together or a glass of wine or, you know, those sort of things, super. I think that's a great idea. For kids, I mean, you know, maybe they go to a club and dance. That's, you know, mm-hmm. Those sort of things involved, and, you know, things we used to. I think book clubs are great. I mean, I think those are, I mean, I think there's just so many outlets and avenues and things that we can explore. I think just be involved with something.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of hit yourself from all sides, and, you know, try to make some impact into somebody else's life, I think, is the other piece. And, you know, I think that's incredibly important as well. And, you know, it doesn't have to be anything earth shattering other than sometimes it's enough just to say, hi, how are you? I mean, you know, I've had some bad days in my clinic, and, you know, some patients are totally oblivious to it. And there's others that'll come in and go, boy, you okay today? You look a little stressed. How are you? I mean, I think that's wonderful. And people, it makes me feel good, kind of calms me, allows me to kind of answer and take a deep breath and kind of move forward. And it kind of humanizes myself and everybody else too. So I think that's the other piece, is don't lose that human element, that connection. It's okay to say, hey, I'm not having a great day, or, hey, I'm having a wonderful day. How are you? Or what can I do to make your day better? Or any of those sort of things. So I think those are all important pieces to look at.
I love it. That's incredible. So really, we talked about the importance for, you know, and I know you're talking in general, but I'm going to bring it back to talk about boys, to help them really move themselves into manhood. We need to acknowledge their need for physical outlet and physical contact. And there's most of those things. I really believe there needs to be force behind it, aggression behind it. As simple as, you know, a sledgehammer with a tire. So if you can't find a boxing place or a jiu-jitsu place or karate, you think you can't afford it, let's find a tire and a sledgehammer and let them beat the crap out of it. I had an old ping pong table. I gave two bats to my son and his friend one day. It was falling apart. I said, actually, can you guys just go destroy that thing and take it to the curb? They were like, what? I said, you can do whatever you want. Here's some bats and an axe. And I go, we can just, they lit up with the opportunity to be destructive and destroy and cut it up. And when wood falls down, about my son's first axe, he was 7 or 8, I think, maybe 8. And I was like, well, here, I went to the place. The guy taught me what to do. He's like, it's okay. He can handle this. I'm like, okay. I was scared. I was a mother, like, oh, please God, don't cut off your foot. Right. And let him chop up all the wood in the backyard. He was so proud of himself. So first of all, got the energy out. He felt strong. He felt like he had some control. So go with physical stuff. I love the internal he went all the way to meditation. Absolutely. Kids can meditate. And there's also devices that you mentioned. So there's all kinds of tech, you know, that's available, such as Mind Alive, Heart Math, uses kids. So you can actually help, you know, do this, use a guided meditation, chanting. Kids can do this, and it lets them be quiet. Mm-hmm. And go inside and listen to their own thoughts. You mentioned it. Hey, I like to go for walks in nature to listen to my own thoughts. That's meditation. You can walk and meditate. Take your kids to a park. Right. No device. Let them just walk, right?
Telling myself I like a hot bath and just totally just get away.
Oh, of course you do. Hot bath. Oh, that's what I love you, Michael.
Yeah, then you brought up myself and just chill out. So yeah, I mean.
Because you need to be aware of what's outside of you as well as what's inside of you. And I think that's the piece that often we're all in culture not being told, but especially children, it's distraction, the phone and the movie and the this and the text and the blah, blah, blah. It's like, no. It's okay to have these feelings. And if some of those feelings are stressful, anxious or anger, you can use something physical to go get it out. You know, right. You don't have to suppress it and acknowledge. Yeah. Like, I'm not afraid of seeing you angry. Boy, go punch something, right? So I love that. Then we had service to others, finding purpose by creating a community. So those are great. Awesome. Well, Michael, thank you so much for being on here. And
my pleasure. Enjoy.
Tell everybody where to find you.
So you can get on my website, www.livelimitlessmd.com, and you can leave messages there, and we'll send you to my email and all that good stuff as well. So
perfect. Awesome, everybody. You'll check them out. I'll have everything in the description for you to get a hold of Michael if you need to get a hold of his books or his bone health program, or if you even want to become a patient, because we have our first meeting in a few days, and he's going to reveal my labs, and he's going to get all my hormones balanced. He's going to help me get my stuff together.
And I'm looking forward to it. Definitely some things I think we can help you with and get you moving forward. And I think, you know, definitely something that
I am not enjoying
and gets me excited is to help other people really kind of optimize their health and where they want to go. So
I'm excited, you guys, because Michael and I had a conversation about peptides, which led into him telling me I probably needed testosterone, and it led into, like, he's like, I could help you. I'm like, really? So I'm switching gears, and we're going to try some stuff. And at 48, I had the painful conversation this weekend with my son. I don't care. It's a podcast. I'm on my period. So I started my period the day, the full moon and the period. And he was flying home from Utah from summer school. So I'm all excited and overwhelmed and so much emotion. And like everything I started crying all the time. And by the second day, I was like, babe, I am so sorry. I go, here's the thing. I got to explain something to you. You're old enough to hear it. Because if you date a woman or ever get married or have a daughter, you're going to need to understand, I am going through a change right now. This is without a doubt the weirdest period of my life. Perimenopause has hit me, Michael, and I'm like, I don't like it.
I understand.
I am super sensitive right now. He goes, because you're overreacting. I go, Bennett, I am overreacting. And I'm just kind of, I'm so sorry. I go, but I can't help it right now. I mean, it was horrible, but I had to be honest. I am overreacting. I'm still upset what you just said, but I'm having this is too much. I'm going to go take a bath. And that's what I had to do. And he was like, oh. So I think it was an interesting moment for him to be like, oh man, you're watching your mom go through a little something here. I remember my mother going through menopause. It was horrible, but nobody knew what it was. It was like sudden depression, isolation, locked in her bedroom moment. She kind of emerged 2 or 3 years later, fat. And she's like, and she read, this is what was going on with me. I now know. but nobody knew, right? They didn't know to tell her why she was gaining weight, why she was getting so depressed, why she wanted chocolate cake all the time. And so I'm having a sudden, like, I am having some overreactions. This is not, I'm not feeling as stable as I used to. And I had to tell him that, but it was actually an interesting moment to say, yeah, you're getting old. And I can't protect you from something. Nothing's wrong with me. It's just, I'm a little unbalanced and I'm having an, I told him, I said, I'm having an appointment. I'm going to get, just like you needed some help to balance you, I need some help to balance me. Exactly. And you can need to be patient with your mom because this, I'm different. I'm not the same as I was 10 years ago, you know? Right. And it's a really interesting thing to do. So parenting through some of these changes, I'm
no question. And then, you know, I think important to, you know, I love how you explain how raw you are, just saying how you feel, and you don't really give a damn what anybody else thinks about it, which I don't. And then, you know, I think guys have the same thing. And I've had plenty of folks and men in my clinic that, you know, they're depressed and they're angry and they're upset and they're not able to recover from exercise and they're not able to do the things they used to, and a similar type of thing. I mean, they've got no testosterone and their thyroid's screwed, and a number of other things are going on. Downside is, talking about teenage boys, I'm seeing more and more younger men with lower and lower testosterone levels, which is going to become a big issue here moving forward. So I think that's the area that we may want to talk about at some point in the near future. But
yeah,
I mean, it's a whole gamut of things, and everybody's unique, which is the fun part. It also makes it the more challenging part. But that's the good thing, is we're treating you as an N of one. We're not doing population treatments and population interventions. We're listening to you, looking at you, getting your data, and then making decisions on the best way to get you from point A to point B or wherever you need.
I'm excited. That's what we do, guys. And it's all about everything he was saying.
It is fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And what you talked about throughout the whole thing, and I'll just, but you didn't say it this way, is like, how do I go from being good to being better? Yeah. To being great. Good to great. Some people were there great, like you said, in high school, or they're great in college, and then it went downhill, or states that, or they were just, they never were great. They only got to good. Okay. And you and me and people we deal with are looking to go from, well, how do I get from good to great in everything, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually? And I'm trying to do the same thing to teach my son and let him know he's in control of that.
Great.
He is in charge. Nobody can force him. He is sovereign, and everything, you know, he's a victim to nothing. Don't believe any of that old story crap. And it's definitely hard to do because it's coming from everywhere. I'm not the only voice, and I'm not the most important voice in his mind. And it's a teenager, right? I'm not. And parents need to, mothers and fathers need to be aware of that. You will lose that super big influence, and it's not easy. I am not enjoying it, but I've got to remember that and pull myself back all the time. So for now, one of the best ways I can be a good mother is to make sure I stay strong and healthy and balanced. And so I'm taking care of myself. Right. Is important for me to mother him well. So I can't expect him to become a strong man if I don't keep myself as a strong woman. Agreed. So I look forward to, you know, there's a reason why self-care is not bubble baths and chocolate. You know, I do that too, but it is checking your hormones, acknowledging when you're aging, acknowledging what you're going through as a woman, and investing the time, money, and effort into saying, okay, like something's changed and I really want to optimize. I can't ignore this. I'm not going to take pills and put the weird symptoms down, right?
Agreed.
So I think if you want to raise boys into strong men, you need to be as stable and strong yourself so they have something to model after and you can have make better decisions. And so when I'm crying over little things he's saying that I know I shouldn't be crying about, it is time to make sure we get it all together, okay? So I'm looking forward to that. All right, Michael, have a good rest of the day.